The resulting blast pulverizes every support pillar on the ground floor. The upper floors of the building rapidly begin to pancake. Flames thrust outward, driven by the immense shockwave through every ground floor window. Moments later, the walls are blown out. As the second floor reaches the ground, it crumbles into rubble, followed in close succession by the third and others. More rubble ensues. In seconds, all six stories have flattened into one. Jack hears the explosion on his cell phone and whoops. "Wow! I can hear it! Must have been loud!" But then he hears Joe, Mark, and Sid's last screams. Joe's cell phone hits the floor, followed by the sound of breaking glass, bricks falling, and the roar of the disintegrating warehouse's last upright seconds. The sixth floor hits bottom, and the roof flattens upon Joe, Mark, Sid, their chairs, cell phone, beers, snacks, and Joe's small broken bottle of whiskey. The fireball, now unencumbered by the building above, bursts freely into the cold, cloudless Omaha night sky. Nearby brick-and-mortar buildings begin to collapse from the seismic blast. Joe's car is blown away and its gas tank explodes. An underground high-pressure gas main ruptures and a torch of flame shoots 100 feet into the air. Water mains disgorge. Their spray falls as ice in the frigid wind. A nearby electric transformer station is hit by debris, its coiled high-tension interconnecting cables short-circuit, producing clouds of sparks until the transformers themselves explode from the overload. Across the south end of the city, buildings and houses darken as the electric grid collapses. Then a propane railway tanker car on a passing freight is hit by debris and explodes, taking with it two others. The south end of Omaha is in flames. From across town, the guys, David, Lance, Todd, Tom, Mary, and Jay, watch from David's picture window. David grins at Lance and gives the thumbs-up signal. "I guess Jack dialed home, so to speak," grins Lance. "I'll tell you, honey, that's one hell of a wrong number," laughs Mary. The blast is so strong that David's warehouse shakes a bit. They watch in amazement, their faces illuminated by distant fire, knowing that what they see was intended for them. Emergency vehicles rush from all directions, but they cannot approach the inferno. It'll take most of the night to get the gas mains turned off and to stabilize the fire now burning throughout the rail yards. Using high-pressure water when the wind chill is minus 50 is not an easy job. By morning, there'll be an ominous black cloud of soot still rising from where Joe's warehouse was. The plume caught by the winds aloft will shear east towards Iowa. In St. Louis, Jack sits dumbstruck. He suddenly realizes what's happened. Now he's in seriously big trouble. His colleagues are not going to be impressed. He was not supposed to destroy his own warehouse and, along with it, a large part of Omaha. This will be viewed as very careless. He desperately wishes he knew how this could have gone wrong. The cable news networks flare into special alert mode, delighted to have a disaster in primetime. Even the national entertainment networks cut in. This beats reality shows of people eating insects. Traffic copters from the major stations in Omaha and Council Bluffs scram into action and flock like vultures around the scene. Within minutes, satellite uplinks are established around the world. Remote broadcast trucks converge on the site and transmitter masts and dishes are quickly deployed. The helicopter video feeds commence with their muffled, shocked commentaries. Chapter 13, Saturday, January 20. Time, 10 a.m. Saturday morning around 10 o'clock, David pages Jay and Mike from his cell phone. "You guys come over to the operations center on the second floor?" "Sure. What's up?" says Jay. "We have a few computer exploits we're going to initiate, and you might want to watch." "What do you want me for? All that computer stuff gives me a headache," says Mike. "Oh, you're here to observe revenge being extracted." "Cool. Works for me. Be right there." David and Todd are seated at keyboard consoles around the main system displays. Lance is lounging on one of the executive chairs at a desk nearby. Mike and Jay enter the main control room of David's digital empire. They walk quickly down the corridor between the howling blowers cooling racks of hot CPUs and busy disk arrays. Arriving at the main system console, David says to them, "Pull up some chairs, people." Todd begins keying in coordinates, saying, "Okay, you two, this is the fun part. I'm switching to the main North American graph." As he does, the large screen changes from a world view to a view of Central America, Mexico, the Caribbean, the U.S., and Canada. Jay says, "Okay, what's up?" David replies, "Now we go on the offensive. You're about to witness a cyber world war. We're going to shut those bastards' financial empire down. Todd, it's all yours." "Okay, here's their weighted cell phone call traffic network, thresholded at a 30% probability." A multicolored network of lines flash on the screen with major star-like intersection points clearly visible. Jay asks, "What's this?" "We've been monitoring their cell phone traffic since we got control of Mark and Sid's cell phones. We installed viruses on them, as you know, and they've propagated themselves to the phones they called and phones they called and so on. Phones began sending me back the numbers they were calling," says Todd. "Then I analyze the calling patterns. Colored dots are major incoming or outgoing cell phone traffic sites. The size and brightness appearance of the dot indicates its level of activity. The lines connecting the dots represent the traffic between major hubs in the network. The thickness of a line indicates the amount of traffic, adds David. So as you see, it's basically a hierarchy. Here, let me superimpose the states and city names, says Todd as he makes a few keystrokes. The map changes. It now shows faint outlines of the states and, in small text letters near the dots, city names. The lines are thresholded. That is, I'm not showing low-level traffic, just the repeated high-volume traffic. You can see that St. Louis is heavily involved with Chicago, New York, and Los Angeles, which, from the amount of traffic through them, are higher up on the hierarchy, says Todd. Sweet, says Jay. Now, what are you going to do with this? Well, first, you're going to go through my file of names and addresses and compare them with what you've got stored as a result of your investigation and find out how many match. We extracted these from the network analysis as the most probable mob phones, says David, as he transmits a file to Jay's console. Hang on a minute, says Jay, as she logs into a server half a world away and begins writing an SQL script. Okay, I'm running your file against my database. A few seconds later, she says, okay, here's your file back, with asterisks in front of the names that matched. The second line is indented with a quick summary of what I have on them, as she transmits the file to David and Todd. Next, I'll run the names through a Soundex algorithm and run it again. That way I can allow for possible spelling differences. Okay, here's the Soundex match. Names from your file first, with asterisks, my spelling indented on the second line. Great, looks like our filtering project worked pretty damn well, Todd. Yep, very well indeed. Okay, you want to strike North America first, or do you want to wait and do the rest of the hemisphere first, asks Todd. Let's bring in South America. Just the confirmed links from Jay's list, says David. Todd hits a few keys and the map expands to show the Western Hemisphere as far as south as northern Argentina. The lines reform to connect dots with especially bright ones in Colombia and a few other countries well known for the drug trade. The national borders appear faintly and the city names affix themselves to the dots. There it is, says Todd, and we own every one of their phones. Okay, shut them down, says David. What are you going to do, asks Jay. We're going to make it impossible for them to call one another. Their phones will still work, but whenever one of them tries to call another, the phone will be randomly rerouted to some call center by the receiving phone. You mean if some guy in New York calls Medellin, Colombia, he gets the TV cable company? Yeah, something like that. And he gets put on hold for hours, laughs David. Won't they suspect something? Probably. They might even go out and buy new phones. But when they do, and they try calling one another, the new phone will be infected too. I doubt that they'll call customer service and say that they can't phone their dope suppliers. Not a good PR move. Are you ready? Says Todd. Make it so, quips David. Todd makes a few keystrokes and says, okay, here's the current point-to-point traffic of phones on our list. Now I'm sending messages to all of them to reject calls from the list of numbers that I'm transmitting. It'll take about 10 minutes to propagate the order through all the phones. See? Says Todd. Their communications network is beginning to crumble. Those little flashes you see next to the city dots are calls being rejected. They watch as the lines between the cities begin to fade and disappear and are replaced by multiple multicolored bursts that quickly grow more frequent. They're getting desperate. Watch, says David. Every call that doesn't get through, they're trying other numbers in succession. They're out of touch. It's all breaking down now. Soon all the lines are gone, now totally replaced by starbursts that are dominating the display. Mike says, this is freaking great, but what'll they do now? I expect we'll see new phones being brought in, including a lot of anonymous prepaid phones, but they won't help much. I'll update the reject list with them as soon as they start phoning one another. Soon they won't even know one another's phone numbers. Their whole network is going to hell in a handbasket. But next they'll try the internet, says Jay. True, says David. But as you know, we've cracked their VPNs and we've loaded rootkits on their machines worldwide. Todd keys up another Western Hemisphere display and says, here's their computer network. It looks similar to the phone network for obvious reasons, says David. Todd says, let's switch to a cumulative real-time display and see how many are trying to get through with their laptops now that their phones are dead. The screen lines darken, then start to reappear as messages are being sent point-to-point, multi-point. Yep, that didn't take long. Okay, I think it's time to shut down their VPN network. You got it, says Todd, as he sends out messages to his rootkits on a few thousand machines at once. The rootkits begin to halt VPN traffic, making the lines on the screen begin to fade. Eventually, they go dark with just each dot and adjacent flashes showing. Each flash is a message trying to be sent to another on the VPN networks, and my rootkits are now routing unencrypted copies of all their email messages to DEA, which should make for interesting reading if any of the bureaucrats there are working. Probably not. We're also getting copies. Want to see some? Yeah, let's take a look, says David. The screen flashes to text and messages begin to slowly scroll by with desperate, what the fuck is going on? Texts from one bad bad guy to another. Some are funny. Most are clueless as to what's happening. Okay, act two. Now they're deaf and blind. Let's make them poor, too, says David. Todd hits a few keystrokes and a world map appears with various sized and brightness dots appearing randomly. These are their major offshore banking accounts, all numbered accounts in tax havens with very lax banking laws and no data exchange agreements with major governments. How'd you get their account numbers and passwords? All that stuff is encrypted. You couldn't have broken their code in a week, says Mike. Don't have to, remember? I got rootkits on their machine. I've been keylogging all their transactions. I've been capturing their account numbers and passwords as they type them in before the encrypting takes place, says Todd. Cool, says Mike. He hits a few more keys and white stars appear on the map. These are banking sites associated with major non-profit charitable organizations around the world. Red Cross, Red Crescent, UN agencies, you name it. And now, Todd, if you please, let's give our friends a taste of the rule that it is better to give than receive, says David.